stories, like we were talking about, they uniquely shape our longings. We can kind of create a false tension. I think C.S. Lewis said, I love this quote, he says, "Reason is the natural order of truth, but imagination is the organ of meaning."
You're listening to the Read Aloud Revival Podcast. This is the podcast that inspires you to build your family culture around books. Welcome to the Read Aloud Revival Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah McKenzie, and this is episode 21. I've been eagerly awaiting this chat with today's guest for some time, but before we get to him, I'd like to thank all of you who have taken the time to leave an iTunes rating or review. The time you take to rate the podcast there goes so far to helping the show flourish, and I really appreciate each of you who take the time to do that. Honestly, clicking over to iTunes and reading those is one of my very favorite things to do. So thank you so much for that. If you love the podcast, you're going to be over the moon happy about the Read Aloud Revival membership site. There you're going to find a stable of helpful video workshops from the revivalers you love most. These workshops range from 20 minutes to over an hour, and they include printable workbooks and easy to navigate interfaces to help you develop the skills and the practical know-how you need to take building your family culture around books to the next level. Adam Andrews, a big time listener favorite from episode 2 of the Read Aloud Revival podcast, has a workshop in there about how to build the perfect reading list for your family. Janice Campbell, author of Excellence in Literature, has created a workshop for us called How to Read a Classic with Your Teen. Other workshop creators include Andrew Putowa from the Institute for Excellence in Writing, Heidi Scovel, a listener favorite guest from episode 10. She's walking us step by step through the process of setting up a parent-child book club, and lots of others. More workshops are going to be added every month all through the year. There are, of course, a bunch of other wonderful resources going into that membership site for you as well. You can find out more about the membership site at readaloudrevival.com, or you can head straight there at readaloudrevival.me. Now, let's get today's party started. I have been gushing about S.D. Smith's brand new book, The Green Ember, since I first laid my eyes on it. My kids and I read it aloud, and it was just absolutely wonderful. S.D. Smith, well, I'll just call him Sam, runs the StoryWarren website. They have articles and resources there to help parents foster imagination in their kids and give practical resources like book, music, and movie reviews, and even provide short stories, poems, and songs for kids who love a good story and a leap down a rabbit hole of their own imagination. Honestly, I can't think of a group of people I'd rather have on my side, and the folks at StoryWarren are just that. They're our allies in imagination. If you follow me on Facebook, on my blog, or pretty much anywhere, you've heard me rave about Sam's new book, The Green Ember. It's really unprecedented in modern literature, I think. We'll talk about The Green Ember a bit with Sam himself, so let's just welcome Sam to the show. Sam, welcome to the Read Aloud Revival.
Thank you, Sarah. It's my privilege and honor to be here. I'm a big fan of yours and of the show. We love it as a family, and I'm so grateful for you having me on.
Oh, well, I'm really, really grateful you've made time to chat with us, because I've been wanting to talk to you for a while, so this is going to be fun.
I hope so. I hope it'll be fun.
Well, tell me a little bit about your family, and so our listeners can hear a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Well, I have one wife. Her name is Gina, and she is wonderful. She's the kind of the heroic heart of our home, and we have four children. Our oldest is almost 12, and her name is Anne, and she's a wonderful, voracious reader, excellent little girl, and I have a little illustrator named Josiah. He's 9 years old now, and he's kind of a illustrator, a filmmaker in the works with his little Lego stop motion stuff. And then Micah is 6. He's almost 6. He'll be 6 in a couple of weeks. He's our little soccer player, a wonderful little boy. And then Nora, she just turned 3 yesterday, day before yesterday.
Aww.
And she is kind of the person that keeps us all on our toes. She's hilarious, kind of insane, super funny. We sometimes post pictures and little videos of her on Facebook. And
I love seeing those. Yeah.
She has this kind of international following, you know, that's far exceeds the rest of us. She's hilarious. She's kind of nutty and really funny girl. So that's our family. And we we're all big readers for the most part. And Nora doesn't read a lot, but she loves to be read too. And she often demands to be read to regularly. But we live in snowy right now, West Virginia.
Very good. And you created the StoryWarren website. So tell us about the StoryWarren. What's that for? And why did you create it?
Okay. It's hard to make a short answer on this one, but I'll give it my best. StoryWarren, it's a team of allies. Like you said, it's working together to help parents foster holy imagination at home. And I think the reason that we started StoryWarren had to do with probably a lot of tensions, a lot of things that I felt like were needs in the culturally and like personally for me. I thought back to what I wish sort of that I would have had as a child. And just, I know that being a parent can be kind of a lonely thing. It can be a daunting thing. On the one hand, I think for Christians, we feel like on one hand, there's sort of a counterculture of art that is sort of deemed as safe for the whole family. And sometimes I think that's actually kind of dangerous in a way.
I'm glad you said that. I was hoping we could talk about that. I've heard you say that before.
I think that's a complicated issue, but I think for me anyway, I oversimplify and say, oh, there's that whole mess of stuff that's safe and tame and not very challenging, not very realistic. And then on the other hand, we have sort of a toxic world where, you know, you just watch a few minutes of an awards show performance of singers and you realize that the art that we're celebrating culturally is regularly really perverse and kind of base. And that makes its way naturally, of course, into media for children, you know, just looking at the dolls at the store and you can kind of see people made a lot of pointed that out. You know, that's just obvious. I think we can take that for granted. But and that makes its way into literature as well. So anyway, I think whether it's completely realistic or it's just sort of how we feel, and I think there's probably some truth to both of those, but there's those sort of two poles. And I feel like, oh, my goodness, there's just nowhere to turn. I have felt that way. And I think we created StoryWarren as kind of a way to be with those parents that are sort of in that gap. And, you know, with this sort of perverse and base art, we can look at that and say, and just get really upset and sort of spend our lives protesting or, you know, carry the big sign that says no, 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 and sort of live our lives with a no, no, no. But we don't want to spend our lives doing that. We don't want to spend our lives saying no and arguing about the no and making the case for no.
Yeah.
Even though I think there's value in that. I do think that's a calling for some people. But we wanted to look for a yes and to help connect families to a yes. And I've told the story before, but I remember where I was when I first read The Lord of the Rings as a teenager, and I'm going to have to just go ahead and confess now that I was not a big reader as a child. And I feel like actually part of creating StoryWarren was sort of hoping to address that lack for a lot of boys.
Yes.
I feel like that's true for a lot of boys. And I think we're paying for that in a lot of ways, like with the kind of men that we are, and I include myself in that. So I sort of want to see that change. But I remember where I was when I first read that book. And there's this part, which will probably be familiar to a lot of your listeners, where it's the Siege of Gondor and Minas Tirith is being attacked by these just hordes of orcs. And there's just a hopelessness and a doom in the city. And the gate has been broken down. And the Witch King has entered the city. And he's poised to attack Gandalf, this great wizard, but they're hopeless. Their ancient allies have let them down, and they haven't come, and so there's just doom and gloom. And then, right at this moment of this horrible doom, they hear the horns. They hear the horns of Rohan, and they know that their allies are coming. That they have come, and they know that they're not alone. And that moment, I just remember how I felt. Oh, the horns of Rohan! Wow, help is on the way. Mm-hmm. And I guess I just. Parenting can be so hard and so lonely and so challenging, particularly in this area, I think of media and literature and stories and imagination, that I wanted StoryWarren to be an ally like that. I wanted us to not to be the heroes of the tale or anything, but a help that was there. People would feel, I mean, when I read C.S. Lewis, I just think, oh, there's the horns. I hear it. I hear it. When I listen to Andrew Peterson, yeah. When I listen to the Read Aloud Revival, you know, when we read your book, Teaching from a State of Rest, when we are friends from the Searcy Institute, I don't know if I'm saying that right, but you know, when I hear Slugs and Bugs, Children's Music by Randall Goodgame, when I hear these things, I feel like I hear the horns and I know that we're not alone. And it's just, it's so, so encouraging. And so I wanted us to be a place where people would make those connections, where they would be able to find allies and where we would be an ally and a connecting kind of presence in their lives. I wanted to be one store, wanted to be a place that was positive, sort of still firmly within the resistance movement, if you will, to mm-hmm. sort of the vapid perversity of much of modern culture. But I wanted to get on the offense. Frederick Douglass said that it's easier to build strong children than to repair broken men.
Mm, oh, my goodness. Yeah.
And I just love that. And that's what we want to be about. I mean, I do think there's a place for the no. I think that's important. And I don't want to be just, you know, blindly sort of Pollyannish about things. But I feel like our calling is to construct. And again, I think you know Zach Franzen.
Yes. He's going to be on the show too here in a few weeks.
Oh, he's great. I mean, I would just, if you're listening to this, I would just stop this one right now and just wait for Zach because he's way smarter. I feel like when I talk to Zach, I feel like I'm going to college. He's so smart. But Zach said this wonderful thing that I feel like is so central to what we're doing. He was kind of dealing with the idea of rebellion and how the culture is so steeped in rebellion right now. And he said, construction is the best way to rebel against the established rebellion. And I've just kind of taken that on as a mantra. Like, it's easy to see the destruction and it's easy to sort of wail and moan and lament about that. And again, I think there's a place for that. But something that's really powerful you can do is create and construct. And so I think StoryWorn is a place where we are about construction, that we want to point kind of a giant foam finger at truth, beauty, and goodness. That's what we want to do. We want to point that out. And we want to, well, I feel like stories get at our affections in a way that nothing else does.
I agree.
That's where our imagination comes in. So that's what's important. So I feel like we want to, I don't know, we want to come alongside parents in a place where it's, I feel like the line is a little bit weak in the war. We've got a bit of a weakness there. And so we want to come and be a support in that area. And we want to sort of address where children, everyone, where we make our decisions, in the place that we love, in our hearts, in our affections, in our imagination. And of course, that's all ultimately kind of tied into the kingdom of God, because that's the end and aim of all our art. The kingdom of God is our family's heart. That's who we are. And so we want everything that we do at StoryWorn to sort of be soaked in this anticipation for the kingdom of God, that anticipating the kingdom of God in family life, culturally, that impacts the way we live now, because we're looking forward to something that's very real and that's kind of the height of truth, beauty, and goodness. So we think, well, let's live like that now. Let's live like an outpost for that future kingdom that's coming. And so the kindling imagination, I sort of wanted the phrase, I mean, I love allies and imagination mm-hmm. as sort of our little tagline, but yeah. I love, and nobody else loves this, but I love kindling imagination for kingdom anticipation.
Oh, I think I saw that on your site too. And I really liked that as well. Well, your work there is so important. And I'll tell you what, every time I get The Warren and the World in my inbox, your newsletter in my inbox, I get goosebumps at the end when you say, we're on your side. And I think it's because it speaks to that real need that we feel as parents, exactly like you were just saying, kind of a loneliness or a, what do we do now? So we see these kind of two dichotomies in literature and art culturally, you know, the perverse base kind of stuff that culture at large is, you know, worshiping more or less. And then the other side, which really intrigues me because I hadn't been able to put my finger on it, but you said too safe. And neither of these is speaking to our need as humans or the real beauty of, oh, I don't know how to describe it. You just described it so much better than I ever could. But I think at the story, Warren, you're really meeting a need there that I haven't seen. It's just striking a chord with me that hasn't happened before. So yeah, allies and imagination. That's exactly, I feel like that's what I, exactly what I feel like the work you're doing is I feel like you are my ally as I'm sort of diving into books and the culture with my kids. It feels so encouraging to know that there is this other group of people doing the same thing in their own home.
Well, that's very gratifying. That's what we want to do. And honestly, you know this, I think, because a lot of what you're doing resonates with the same people. I mean, I do have a soft spot in my heart for fathers and for men and for boys. I feel like our main audience is moms. And I think that's fine. That's great. And I have a tremendous heart and a burden for moms who are tired and who are weary and who are worried. And I feel like one thing that you do so well is that you speak to them and you tell them that it's going to be okay, that we need to rest, that you need margin, and these really, really important messages that I like would kill, you know, to have my wife, you know, get deep into her soul. And she is getting it. And part of that is because of you. And so to just to come alongside in this area, that's challenging, I think, for a lot of us. And I feel like we can, you know, it would be wrong to look at us at StoryOne as kind of the experts. I think we've got a good team. And I think Carrie does a great job with War in the World. And we've got wonderful writers as part of our team. But we're the same kind of people. Like, I feel the same way. This is, like I said, this is born out of a need that I have felt in my own soul, my own life, our own family life. And really, that's part of the mission is I think about, well, what do we need? Well, let's do that. And I think about that with storytelling, with everything. It's, I think there was a famous quote by Kurt Vonnegut, which is a little off color, so I won't say it in its detail. But the idea was that basically, if you try to write something for everyone, you'll end up writing for no one. But if you try to aim at somebody, then it might kind of reach the whole world. And so that's the Green Ember was from our kids, and StoryOne is kind of for our family. That's what we need and what we want. And that I'm so glad that we're on your side. That resonates with you, because that's our heart. I just feel like parenting is hard.
It is.
And being a mom is exhausting, and being a dad is challenging in so many ways. And we want to come alongside and say, hey, this isn't everything, but it's something. And we've got a cold glass of water for you. Hopefully some kind of a feast we can invite you to and relieve you in some ways and give you cheer and encourage you, because the parents are doing they're the ones making war, and we want to just be with them while they're doing it and be a help. So I'm glad that's resonated. That means a lot to us. That's our heart.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Green Ember. So tell us about what, going to throw a 5,000 links in the show notes. So if you're listening to this, you can go to the show notes for episode 21 and you'll be able to find the Green Ember in paper copy for your Kindle. There's an excellent audio version out. This is a book you're definitely going to want to get your hands on and share with your kids. But Sam, for now, let's talk about writing the Green Ember. So what prompted that? Where did that all begin for you?
Like everything else, almost, it seems like it started at home. It was a tell aloud story before it became a read aloud. It started, we lived kind of in the country in West Virginia, and I would sit on the porch with my 12-year-old daughter, almost 12. She was probably, I don't know, 3, 4. She was just a little thing. And we would sit on the porch and we would watch the animals, deer and rabbits and that kind of thing in the yard. And we took kind of a special interest in some rabbits, and I would kind of tell her these sort of really childish stories about the rabbits. And it sort of started this adventure. And they were all always improvised on the spot and probably not very good. But as she got older, those stories just, she kept wanting more and more of them. And so they grew and grew. And then our second child, our son, he came along, he was old enough to listen to stories. And so started telling the kids basically stories sort of about themselves in a way, like parents often do. And the stories kind of grew over time, and as they wanted more and more, I realized that, and as the sort of the serial carried on, I realized that the stakes needed to be raised. And so but they always loved them, and it was exciting. So we'd kind of take walks around our neighborhood, and I would tell them more and more stories and more and more. And it would kind of get bigger and grander as it went on. And before long, we kind of had a pretty complete narrative with a lot of history and that kind of a thing. And so that was always my dream, to write it down for them. And they always kind of asked me to do that. And it changed over time, and it got deepened. The peril kind of deepened, and it got deeper and deeper. So eventually that's what became the Green Ember. And so when I sat down to write the novel, I knew kind of the beginning and I knew the end of at least this story. And I didn't exactly know it was everything that was going to happen. And a lot changed and a lot developed as I wrote it down. But that story was for my kids. And that was the beginning of it. And I've always thought, if they love the story, then that's all the reward that I need. And it's been very rewarding because they do. And it feels like it's our story as a family, and sort of other people enjoying it, which is so exciting to us. It feels like just something that we're sharing with other families.
Oh, that's so great. And I think I've quoted this quote of C.S. Lewis's like in 5 podcasts. People are probably getting tired of hearing it. But he has this great quote where he says, a good children's story, well, now I can't even remember it well enough to quote it exactly, But basically, a children's story that's just enjoyed by children is not a great children's story in the slightest. And I think your book is a perfect illustration of children's story that appeals to me as the parent. It speaks to me, and I'm so engaged and interested and thrown in to what's happening and what that possibly could mean for my own story as my children are. And so I think it is really a whole family thing. So I can very much picture you telling this story to your kids and having it be your family's thing, your family's story. It's not hard for me to imagine that.
That's probably been one of my favorite things. Like I you know, I'm new to this author thing, so you'll have to give me some pointers about how to navigate these waters. But one thing that's just without a doubt, and there's things that are exciting and then they get kind of, you know, difficult or hard. There's all kinds of ups and downs. But the thing that's consistently that I've loved is hearing from children, getting their letters and their drawings of their little rabbits with swords. And I love that. That just gets me going. So it just gets in my heart. And or parents will send me pictures of or post on Facebook of a child, this beautiful child holding the book and with a big smile. So I love when the kids resonate with it. But the only thing that maybe like goes beyond that is hearing that families enjoyed it together. That's just, and I think that's what you're fostering, this sort of this neglected, forgotten old tradition of families in receiving stories together. And I love that so much because I feel like stories, like we were talking about, I feel like they shape our affections. They shape who we're going to be. And to share that sort of intimate soul shaping activity with your parents, with your family, is such a gift. And to even get a hint that that's happening. And I've heard from other people too, that that's sort of happened with the Green Ember. And that is so gratifying because I like the story. And I agree with C.S. Lewis that sort of fairy tales, I think he said that someday you'll be old enough to start reading fairy tales again. And man, I love that. And I think there's a timeless quality to that that makes a connection to people that's so special. But boy, to think that there are families enjoying this book together and that everybody is sort of enjoying it. I mean, that's the sweet spot for us. There's several things like the Narnia books and Randall Good Games music, his Slugs and Bugs music, and several other things that just kind of hit our whole family that we all think is funny, that we all think is good.
Yeah.
And there's nothing like that. I mean, because so we can all enjoy it together. I feel like in an age that's so, and that what Ken Myers called, he said we're an auto-cultural, as in we're not necessarily multicultural, we're auto-cultural in that we all sort of have our own individual cultures and that we're made for community. We're increasingly isolated, even by sort of the enabling of technology, that we get our own news feed, we get our own music, we have our own everything, our own websites, and
everybody has their own device and their own world. Kind of, they're all. It's kind of rare to share those things as a family anymore, right?
Yeah, and it's kind of an echo chamber. We find the blogs that think like us, and so we're almost. I think for children, particularly with a lot of their, I guess, senses, a lot of their abilities, sort of not yet shaped to isolate them is so dangerous. And that's dangerous for any of us, obviously. So enjoying things together, I feel like I'm so grateful for what you're doing. It's definitely inspired us to focus more on doing read alouds together. And so, that anybody would be enjoying the Green Ember in that way is just like, that is like hitting a grand slam for us, man. It's just so exciting for us as a family. We love to hear that. It's super encouraging.
Well, when you were just talking, it reminded me of when I was reading aloud. It was all of us. The whole family was in the family room. And I was reading, it was toward the beginning of your book. I don't want to give anything away for people who haven't read it yet, but there's this one point where the characters are lost, and you'll remember this, Sam, the little witty line that Small says about math. Oh my goodness. I read that line and the entire family erupted. And I just sort of looked over the book at my husband and our eyes met, and it was sort of electrifying. It was one of those moments where I thought, this is what we're doing here. It was just one of those beautiful moments that I hoped I never forget, that I hope is engraved in my mind forever, because it was one. I don't know how to describe it except to say I felt like this is what we're supposed to be doing. This is exactly it. This is the point. So
I knew me being bad at math and making math jokes in the book would yield incredible benefits.
Well, you immediately made an ally of my children because they thought, hey, this man gets me. It's great.
Oh, we're there. Believe me, our family is there too. We're trying to not. I mean, you listen to Andrew Kern talk about math, and I'm just like, man, this is. I know we should be loving this, and I know I understand, and it's a problem with me. It's not.
Exactly.
It's not math. It's me. But yeah, we're definitely there too.
Yes, definitely. Okay, well, one of the things I really wanted to talk to you about is what your personal approach or philosophy was about teaching children character or virtue through stories. So I feel like there's sort of these, well, in a lot of the places that we go for stories that build character or virtue in our children, they come from sort of a didactic approach, almost like the, I guess to describe it would be to read an Aesop fable and how there's the moral at the end. You know, here's the story and this is what you're supposed to be thinking about it, which of course, speaking of Andrew Kern and the Searcy Institute again, always tells us, do not read that moral at the end of the story. Ask your children and talk about it, what they think the moral is, because that will be so much more fruitful. But I'm just curious as to know what your personal approach is with your own children as a father when you're trying to use stories to help build up truth and goodness and beauty in your own children and form their souls.
I think that's a wonderful question, and I don't know the answer to it, so let's move on to the next one. I can just tell you sort of where I am with that. I've kind of gone, you know, back and forth on this over the years. I feel like I'm better spot of understanding that now, but it may be hard to communicate. But I feel like it's the same stuff. We're tempted to react, to kind of overcorrect from either really a highly emotional experience that's all of just stories, everything, just feel whatever, and sort of a dead intellectual one, like these are the facts, let's reduce this story down to the moral.
Yeah, right.
I think the answer is in how we're created. You know, what kind of creatures are we? We're beings of both intellect and imagination, so we need both. I do think that stories, like we were talking about, they uniquely shape our longings, and that we can kind of create a false tension. I think C.S. Lewis said, I love this quote, he says, reason is the natural order of truth, but imagination is the organ of meaning. And I'm not a big fan usually of like heavily didactic stories in most settings. I think there are places where that's great. I think sometimes some of the people that I really respect and sort of some of the crowd that I'm in who really love story, they almost have swung the other way and almost think of it as a crime to explain anything to children. And I think that's sort of dangerous too. I think as far as if you know real children, like real children have lots of questions.
Yeah.
And I think it's one way to love them is to answer those questions and to explain things to them. And I'm a big fan of like sort of explaining up anyway. I think using big words is good around kids. And I think that we should explain up instead of dumb down. And
explain
so
up. I have not heard that phrase before. That's such a good alternative to the dumb down. Instead of dumbing down, we should be explaining up. I'm writing that down.
Well, I wrote a post about that at StoryWarren.
I'll find it. Okay.
But I'm a big fan of that. I think using big words is good. I don't think you need to say animal doctor. I think you can. It depends, obviously. Again, this is kind of hard to nail down, but I think you say veterinarian. You say, what's a veterinarian? It's an animal doctor.
Yeah.
And I think you build it. I think vocabulary is a way to enhance imagination. So I think vocabulary is important and explaining up is, yeah, I think it's really crucial with kids. So I love the idea of explaining. And my kids will sit around and it's one of their favorite bedtime or chores sort of stalling techniques because, you know, they'll sit around and let's ask daddy questions. You know, they know that if they can ask anything about history or theology, the Bible or sports, and, you know, that I'll start, that I'll just keep going and going and going. But they love it. And I think it's kind of, I don't know. I know people, we need mystery. We need stories and we need to leave some mystery there. And I'm for that. I love that. You know, if we're sitting with our children and we're opening up history to them, we're opening up language to them, we're opening up our culture, what we love, we're opening up God's word to them. I love the Bible. I've been sitting with the Bible my whole life. And I love it. There's nothing more compelling or interesting. I think it's so fascinating. I think it's incredible to imagine that schooling or the education robs people of the pleasure of the Bible or of literature. I think it's insane that we hate Shakespeare, that we hate Bible class or something. But we do. We regularly do. But how do we accomplish making something that's so profoundly interesting into something that was regularly dismissed as boring is just beyond me.
Right.
But I've done it. And I know I'm among the people that do that. I understand. But the Bible is so amazing. And we're going to be explaining things. So I think I love explaining. I think explaining is wonderful. I think it's great. But, you know, I'd say it's different in different settings. But I think a novel, if it's filled with a lot of secret messages to instruct, usually it makes for a pretty bad story.
Yes.
Not always, but almost always. Tolkien talked about this. I can't remember the exact quote, but he basically talked about how much he hated allegory and talks about how allegory is sort of, it's the willful domination of the reader by the author.
Interesting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think what he did, and what he did so well, masterfully, and, you know, there's no, everyone tries to imitate him, but he's got no equal, of course. But, you know, people, what I think what he did is he invited us into a world. And I mean, I've probably never, I don't know if I've ever read something that's impacted me spiritually as much as The Lord of the Rings. I mean, it's profoundly spiritual, profoundly truthful, full of goodness, full of beauty. It helped me to see things that were in the Bible that I didn't, that I never saw before, just because when I saw them in his setting, you know, some old ideas, chivalric ideas, the beauty of kings, and something that our modern world is kind of like, oh my goodness, this is such an affront, you know, but in that setting, you think, oh, it's beautiful. Oh, mm-hmm. I see a king. He's lordly. He's important. People, you know, bow to him. People love him. But what does he do? He sneaks in and he heals people. He's humble. He doesn't take what's his before. So it enabled me. It gave me eyes to see what was in the Bible. And I think that was there. And I don't think it was in Tolkien's really sort of heavy-handed, like, I'm going to teach you about Jesus now. But right. If you read his writings, it's there. It's all the way through. And he talks about stories bubbling up from the leaf mold of our minds. And I feel like that what he did is he faithfully did that. He faithfully sort of delivered the story that bubbled up from the leaf mold of his mind. And I feel like when we try to sort of take the story, I don't know, I'm thinking of a metaphor that's probably going to come off terrible, but I'm thinking of like a bucking bronco. And we try, when we get that thing under control and we just sort of quietly walk where exactly where we want it to go and it's only control, it's kind of boring. But right. When there's a sort of adventure where what you feel and love and your assumptions come through, but it's not all, you know, it's not all just strictly ordered and set on giving a person a message. I feel like, you know, like a great teacher, I think there's this quote, I can't remember what it is, but just something to the effect of great teachers don't teach their subjects as much as they teach themselves.
Oh, wow. Okay. I haven't heard that one before.
Okay. It's Frederick Buechner, I think.
Okay.
And I probably got it wrong. But basically, I feel like that's what we do. We teach ourselves. We don't necessarily, it's not just the facts. And I think that in a great story, when I read N.D. Wilson's stories, I'm not looking for his lessons, but his assumptions about the world, about the way God made the world, they come through. I mean, so if you read Notes from the Tilt-A-Whirl, his wonderful nonfiction book, and you read his 100 Cupboard series, which is just amazing. It's the same kind of thing, and you can see the same things in both, but it's not a dominating, it's not a heavily didactic, it's not heavy-handed. He's not trying to master us. I think he's inviting us into the world as he sees it through stories. And it's almost more powerful because, again, it gets at our affections. It gets at where we make our decisions about what we love. And so I think there's such an amazing place for that. I think there's probably a better place, a cure for kind of the situation we're in would be to seek a better balance of that old triad of virtue, the truth, beauty, and goodness. So I think that it's sort of the teaching and the sort of the storytelling, they go hand in hand. I think as Ecclesiastes says, it's good to lay hold of the one and not neglect the other. I think we do need to go for the heart. I think the heart is where the affections are moved. I think good storytelling, it aims for the heart and it carries the mind in the same action. So I feel like we do need to go for the heart. And I feel like that's an area where we sort of, I don't know if I can speak for sort of like generally conservative people, mm-hmm. religious people or Christians. I think sometimes we've loved truth so much that we've scorned beauty, we've scorned grace. And I feel like we need to lay hold of one and not neglect the other. And I feel like good storytelling is dripping with truth, but it goes for the heart, it goes for the affections.
Well, I love how you just sort of juxtaposed the invitation, inviting your child into this world of beauty and truth and goodness, and letting that truth and goodness and beauty soak right into your child instead of sort of didactically heavy-handing the, you know, wanting to control it all and make sure that they get exactly what they're supposed to get. It seems to me like the difference between sort of wagging our finger at our child or trying to hit them over the head with all this truth we want to make sure that gets into them before they leave our home, or sidling up next to our child and sort of hooking arms and being our children's allies, really, is what it kind of makes me think of. So when you wrote The Green Ember, you didn't write The Green Ember with an idea that there's this didactic message you wanted to get through, and now I'm going to create a good story to tell it.
No.
Right. I would not. I mean, anybody who reads the book would know that. But I think that unfortunately, especially in Christian literature, modern literature, that tends to be something that happens. And I can't imagine how difficult it is to write a beautiful story like you've done. So I'm not a storyteller myself. And so I'm not saying that judgmentally. I'm just saying that this is what is so inviting to me about The Green Ember, is that I feel like it invites my children into this beautiful world where they can't help but see the truth.
Wow. I love that. Yeah. It's, I mean, you're right. It's, I think that there are people who are trained to discover the secret meanings and the secret lessons. Like they, if those people will find a field day in, probably in The Green Ember, and I've been that person too, so I understand how that works. And I think we are missing something when we reduce, but yeah, there's a lot in there. I think the longing for the kingdom of God is something that comes through in the story, but it's not why I wrote the story. And I almost think if God wants to use it that way, then that would do my heart really good, if it would train our affections to love something that's coming and that's clean and that's beautiful. Then I think that's wonderful. But yeah, I didn't intend, actually, that whole element of the story, the whole cloud mountain and the mended wood, that whole thing, that was something that just happened that wasn't in an outline. That wasn't in the original stories. That just sort of happened.
Wow. Okay. Well, my oldest daughter has said some rather profound little insights. She's had some profound little insights as when we're reading about the mended wood and she's thinking about the kingdom of heaven, and she's made these all by herself. You know, she'll be thinking, and you can kind of see her deep in thought, and I'll be washing dishes and she'll come up behind me and say something like, so they're waiting for the healing of their wood. They're waiting for the healing of their world, just like we're waiting for Christ to heal our world. I'm like staring at her like, oh my goodness. Wow. Okay. That is amazing. And then she's, for her to have come to this kind of understanding without me having to sit down and guide her through some comprehension set of questions to get her there. That's because we are made to love truth and goodness and beauty, I think. And so a really good story, well told, will speak to that natural affinity we have as humans to connect in that way. So
I love that. That's wonderful. That's so great to hear. But don't you, I feel like you're doing the same thing. You know, I feel like, well, the one thing that I, one of the many things I love about Read Aloud Revival and Amongst Lovely Things and your book and just what you guys are doing, what you're doing, is that I just feel like so many people who are doing, it's like, you need to read with your kids. And, you know, and it's like, it's related to sort of guilt. And I think it kind of buys into sort of the world system of like sweeps week in the news, like things are really bad. They're poisoning your children and, you know, you're eating all the wrong things and everyone's going to die on playground equipment. And there's horrible wars. And of course there are horrible things, but it's the sort of the pay attention to us because everything is horrible. And sort of do this because everything is bad. I think that's sort of our default. I think that's how we're trained.
Yeah.
Passively and actively, it feels like, culturally. But I feel like what you're doing with what I love about the Read Aloud Revival is that you are inviting people and you're saying, this is good and this is beautiful. This is fun. And you're doing it with a smile and you can hear the smile and you can say, this is something that has been valuable for us and we're learning and we're doing this and we want to invite you to come along and do it. And it's very, and so I just feel like there's so much, I feel like that's missing a lot. And I hope that we're doing that kind of thing at StoryWorn. And I hope that The Green Ember is an invitation, that it's a positive thing, not just positive for being positives, you know, and ignoring very real dangers and horrors in the world. But I love the fact that it's not something, you know, when you hear you talk about reading out loud, when my kids are driving the car with us and we're playing a podcast, you don't have to say, hey, I think if we did this, you know, it would be fun. Like, it's fun. This is going to be fun. Really, we're going to do it. It's like, you don't have to explain that because you can hear it. It is. And I love that. I think it's a warm, welcoming invitation that doesn't need like sort of directions, doesn't need labels. Like, it's the same thing going back to that sort of intellect and imagination thing. I think that's how God is, you know, in the Bible. I love the Bible. And I love facts and I love doctrine and I love theology. I love it all. But you don't have to teach a kid, you know, that God is powerful.
Right.
Or God is good. When Jesus heals Jairus' daughter, you don't have to say it. When you get the story, you get both. You get the fact that Jesus is powerful, that he does these amazing things, that he's remaking the world, that sick people, you can't be sick around him. He's so incredible, this person. You don't have to say it because there it is. It's in the story and it's an invitation. And I feel like, I love how what you're doing, I feel like mirrors that attitude, which is very contagious.
Well, be careful, because if you keep complimenting me, I'm going to have you on the show every time. Okay, tell us about future projects. What's next? Please tell me there's a sequel coming.
Well, there is a sequel coming. Yes.
Okay. I was hoping you'd say that. Okay. Tell me more.
I'm working on that. I wrote a sort of a novella that's a kind of a prequel to The Green Ember. In the book, there's a lot of mention of the Black Star of Kingston. And
yes, my son is very interested in what happened before. So I'm really glad that you're saying there's a prequel. Yeah.
Well, that's great. Like when we did the Kickstarter, this was kind of fun, actually. It kind of goes into the category of our family feeling that this is our book. But for the Kickstarter only, we did a short book, and I wrote kind of it's like a little novella about the Black Star of Kingston. And there's a little quote at the very beginning. The prologue of The Green Ember is taken from the Black Star of Kingston.
Okay.
And we are going to release that sort of out wide, Lord willing, in probably the summer or so. And Zach's working on some illustrations for that now. But what we did for the Kickstarter is we did a just kind of a limited edition. We just printed 100 of them, and it was part of the tier. But my son, Josiah, who's 9 years old, he's kind of an illustrator. He's learned a lot from Zach Franzen and from our friend Joe Sutphen and Aiden Peterson. And he's learned a lot from them. And he did the illustrations for this little special edition. We did a little special edition of the Black Star.
Oh, very cool. Okay.
A bunch of his drawings in. So that's kind of exciting, but we're going to release that to the public, and that's in the summer. That's exciting as far as me, myself. And then I'm not sure when the sequel to The Green Ember will be out. I mean, we'd love to have it out by Christmas, but I don't know if that's going to be possible. But I'm working on it, and I'm feeling a lot of pressure from people like you.
How about instead of pressuring you, I'll just say I'll pray for you. I'll pray for you that it'll be out by Christmas because I want it in my children's Christmas stockings. So how's that for no pressure? No, just kidding. Okay.
I'll do my best. I'll make it short and stocking sized.
Oh, well, whatever you do is going to be wonderful. And we will continue. The whole Read Aloud Revival community will continue to pray for the wonderful work you're doing. So I almost forgot to ask you this question, and it's my favorite one. I think it might give my guests usually an anxiety attack. So we'll see how you do with it. Are you up for it?
Yes. I'm breathing into a paper bag right now.
Very good. If you were on a deserted island and could only bring 3 books with you, which would they be?
Wow. I think, so we're saying that the Bible is out probably, right? I mean, that is a book. So but I'm going to assume that everybody wants the Bible probably, or should. So if I'm not taking the Bible, or if I can't take the Bible, or if the Bible is already there, like in the drawer of the hotel on the island, and I can just take 3 other ones. I would probably take, I don't know, this is really tough. I would take The Lord of the Rings because I feel like I'm going to read that 100 times in my life. I've read it so many times, so I just love that. I can't, that's definitely one. 2, I'm picking all fiction too because I want to fit into the stereotype of a fiction author.
Okay.
Imagine me with a beret and a goatee and... So, no, I'm just kidding. Let's see. So, number 2, I'm going to cheat on this one. I listened to a lot of audiobooks, and Audible, I bought all of the Sherlock Holmes stories. So, it's 70 hours of Sherlock Holmes. So, I'm counting that.
Oh, my goodness. Who reads those? You don't happen to know, probably.
I can't remember his name, but he's a good reader. It's not the best, but I thought 70 hours, and it wasn't that expensive. And I come back to Sherlock Holmes a lot. I don't know, when I'm in between books, I just come back to those stories. I love them because they're ones that I feel like there's something about them that just kind of, it's calming. This is probably worth saying, but I talked to my brother-in-law who is a U.S. attorney, and he works in law and he works in law enforcement, and he has these sort of horrible conversations all the time with folks and people having very, very difficult, horrible lives, making terrible decisions, a lot of violence and a lot of mistreatment of women. Mm-hmm. He says he comes back to Sherlock Holmes sort of as a way to feel kind of clean or as a way, he says he loves the way that the men talk to the women.
Oh, interesting. I've never read Sherlock Holmes. I probably shouldn't admit that on air, but there we go.
I mean, I love the stories. They're great. But I feel like that was something I kind of resonated with that because I keep coming back to them too. And he just said, I love that what he said there, that he hears so much bad talk about women and so many men that sort of talk and mistreat women. But he loved to hear just men talking to women in a respectful way. I think there's something attractive about this sort of Jane Austen and sort of a more orderly society. I think the Victorian sort of era, I think, is appealing to us partly because I think we want that order. We want people to be respectful to each other. We want women to be treated well and with respect. And I don't know. I love that. So sure, that was a really long answer, but Sherlock Holmes is perfect. Number two. And then three, probably my favorite novel or one of my favorite novels that I feel like I could read 50 times and still be trying to figure it out is Till We Have Faces by C.S. Lewis. Because we have to have Lewis. If I can't take, maybe I'd take all of the Narnia books together and I would take that maybe instead. But if I had to take one of his novels or one of his books, it would be Till We Have Faces, because it's just profound, deep, and beautiful. And it's his best novel, according to his own estimation.
Is that right? I did not know that.
Yeah, it's one of his least known, probably, and maybe least loved of all of his novels. But it is fantastic. And I love them all. I love the Ransom trilogy. I love, of course, Narnia.
Well, I've read a lot of Lewis, but I will say I have not actually read Till We Have Faces yet. But that just flew to the top of my list. So thank you.
it's wonderful. It's wonderful. And I feel like I've read it three times. And I read it the wrong way, like misunderstanding the whole point.
Oh, interesting. So, yeah. Okay.
So it's fantastic. It's kind of like you almost need to read a lot, some other things in order to understand. It's kind of like if you read That Hideous Strength, you have to kind of read The Abolition of Man, or you can read them together. And it's kind of like they're just symbiotic almost. They're just,
I see. Yeah.
Go together. But just Till We Have Faces is brilliant. It's deep. There's some depth to it. What you think is happening is not happening. And who you think is heroic is not heroic. It's just, you will love it. But I have to read it like over and over again. Now, that's one reason I would take it to the desert island, because I would probably read it 100 times. Yep. And like the 100th time, I was, I'm finally starting to understand this.
Yeah, exactly. That's how those great minds are. That's how I am with Andrew Kern, too. I listen to Andrew Kern, and by the time I've listened to the same talk four times, I go, oh, wait a second. I think I'm starting to understand. It's like I'm starting to get that diamond on, you know, that varnished truth. Yeah.
I feel the same way about like G.K. Chesterton. I love him, but I'm kind of like, back that up, listen to that again, or back up and read that again. And maybe I'll read Orthodoxy again, 50 times, and thinking, I think I'm getting this. This, it's like one page of his Orthodoxy is like 100 books.
Yep,
so,
exactly.
So rich.
Thank you so much for coming on the show and chatting with me. This has been wonderful. I knew it would be.
Thank you so much for having me on, Sarah. Like I said, a big fan of what you're doing. Love it. And we're so grateful for this community and how you guys have embraced what we're doing with the Green Ember. We're very grateful, very special to us.
Now it's time for Let the Kids Speak. This is my favorite part of the podcast, where kids tell us about their favorite stories that have been read aloud to them.
Hello, my name is Monica. I wanted to tell you about my baby sister's favorite book. I think her favorite book right now is The Pow Pow Fish. She probably likes it, I think, because there's this Pow Pow Fish in the book, and sometimes when she brings it to Mama, the book, she says Pow Pow or Blub, and her name is Emma. She's almost 2 years old, and we live in Indiana.
Hi, my name is Nathan, and my age is 8. My favorite books are Hush Little Dragon and No David. I like them because they have rhyming words, nice illustrations, and especially the lesson learned in them. And I like Hush Little Dragon because Hush Little Dragon is about a baby dragon that eats anything, and the mother dragon helps him eat it. And in No David, it's nice that the illustrations are really been detailed by the children and the mother in the side. And also that the mother is trying to tell him No David because he just keeps on doing stuff.
My name is Helen and I am 8 years old. I live in New Jersey. My favorite read aloud book is A to Z Mysteries. I like this book because it's about mysteries and kids finding out the answer.
That was fantastic. Thanks, kids, for your recommendations. And a huge thanks to Sam Smith for coming on the show and sharing his insight with us. I just love the work that he's doing at StoryWarren.com and also at his own site, which is sdsmith.net. I'll have links to both of those in the show notes, but I'll tell you what, The Warren and the World, which is the weekly newsletter from storywarren.com, is fantastic. I always read it. I never fail. And I look for it in my inbox. And that's not something that happens very often anymore. I mean, there's so much stuff crowding our inboxes, right? This is something you definitely want to sign up for. A free newsletter, totally worth your while. I'll put a link in the show notes so you can find that easily. And actually, Sam's emails from his personal site, sdsmith.net, are pretty hilarious and awesome too. So make sure you sign up for both of those and just sort of enter into the world of the Green Ember and all of these people who are doing such good work, helping us foster the holy imagination in our children. That's all I have for you today. Again, if you want more information about the Read Aloud Revival membership site, head to readaloudrevival.me to go straight there. Or you can always find podcast episodes, resources, and all kinds of goodies at readaloudrevival.com. Until next time, go build your family culture around books.